Hi everybody, thank you so much for being part of our community. Welcome to another exciting episode of Digital Parenting with me, Evelyn Cassina. Today we have a shift of conversation. We will be discussing matters around sexual online exploitation of children, cyberbullying, self-harming, and I am excited to be introducing to you our guest. She is a child therapist and counselor at Childline Kenya. She has over 10 years of experience working in this industry, and I'm excited to just have this conversation with her. Karibu sana, Caroline Atieno. Please tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do outside work, and begin by just explaining to us your experience working with children.
Thank you very much, Eve, for having me this morning. Like Evelyn said, my name is Atieno Caroline. I am a counselor at the Child Helpline. I have worked with children for a very, very long time. I am also a mother of four, three adults and one teenager.
You've been working with children for over 10 years. What has been when it comes to, we call it oxaya in the professional world, but online child sexual abuse and exploitation? What has your experience been?
First, start by just telling our listeners, those of who are not aware of what oxaya is. These are just crimes that are basically committed using the information communication technology. There are platforms that are used, especially by our children, platforms like Facebook, WhatsApp, YouTube, Twitter, Telegram, and many others. Our children are now engaging more and more and interacting with this space for entertainment. So the risk of oxaya is actually great. It is increasing by day. Remember, we are now having what we are calling CBC. So this means that more and more children are interacting with this space for learning. Yeah, so it means that at that level, when you compare maybe 4 years ago, the level of the risk that the children were in compared to now, I would say the risk is very high. So as much as children are interacting with this space, we would also want to be keen on just understanding what are these children engaging in, especially when they are on the platforms. What are they engaging in? As parents, we need to be very keen, and we need to also develop an interest in this area so that we do not find ourselves in a situation where our children are more informed matters take than we are. So it becomes then a very big problem when we try to understand, maybe offer help as a parent at that point.
I can imagine children even as young as under 5 year olds who are being exposed to sexual abuse online. What do you feel are some of the effects that occur in children once this abuse has happened? And I know this abuse can be a combination of, or an extension of something that had been happening offline, then it now takes a life toll on the online platforms. Tell us a little bit about the effects on children.
Now, when you look at a child, and I want to take an example that you have just given, a child who is 5 years. Remember that for a child to be abused online, or a child to go through oxaya, it means that there was an initial contact, which could be an immediate family member or just someone this child has met online. We have shifted our way of doing things. Children used to play with toys. Nowadays, you find children as young as even 3 years interacting with our phones. And when a child interacts with this phone, they would want to know, how is this gadget being operated? How do I get this? And in the process, they get to interact with the material, which is very sensitive. For example, information, they can come across information that is not child-friendly, adult material. And you may find that at that time, a child who has gotten some good level of awareness in terms of operating this gadget may also be interacting with someone who might be grooming this child. And when they are grooming this child, usually is for purposes of exploiting them sexually or abusing them sexually. So when this happens to this child who is 5 years, when now you look at the effects that are coming as a result of oxaya, some of them are very serious, because now, depending again with the age of the child and the level of the understanding of how their experience has been, you may find that a child may resort to harming themselves. They are not able to cope completely with what has happened to them. You may find that a child also may resort to maybe committing or even attempting suicide. So when you look at the affects the children's interaction with the online space, then we would want to put ourselves as parents at a place where we can now offer support in terms of information, interacting with these children, and guiding them on how best to interact with this platform and also how to keep safe.
So last week, we were privileged to be part of what that was launched by End the Violence Against Children. It was being done in collaboration with Interpol and UNICEF. This particular report was a survey that was done within the last 1 year, which was a COVID year for everybody in the whole world. Mm. And it was on protecting children, Kenyan children, from online sexual exploitation and abuse. And just allow me to read just a few things that were very concerning to me, and I think parents need to be able to have this understanding, that there are children who have experienced this kind of abuse online, have had someone they know share sexual images and videos without their permission. And upon being asked, these children said, some of them were like, you know, it's a friend or an acquaintance. Most of them were over 18. Some of them were under 18. Some of them, the kind of images that were shared, for especially young adults, were from romantic relationships, which have probably broken. And sadly, some of them even had images shared by family members. Another thing that was also very, very shocking to me was some of these children have been offered money or gifts to meet people who have been grooming them online, people who they've just met online, but they've been offered some money or some gift so that they can have an in-person experience. And this is, these are places where now actual abuse happens. And some of these children, because of circumstances, because what you said again, children are very curious, they just get to see, somebody's offering me, say, KFC or something, and they are willing to pay my Uber, why not? You know, and they end up going with these people. One of the other things that also came out, of course, being in a country where there's very affordable internet penetration, children who have experienced online abuse and sexual exploitation, it happened through mobile phones, because it said that majority of the children between the age of 12 and 17, 99% of these children have mobile phones or access to mobile phones. So that's where these kind of interactions were happening. Sadly, when they were being asked why they didn't tell people, some of these children just said, I didn't know who to talk to. How you could explain, I didn't know who to talk to? Is it lack of awareness? Don't we know where to report some of these incidences? What has your experience been, especially with those who have come to you?
It is a sad situation, Eve, that we are in as a country, because one, when you talk about reporting, that is actually where the biggest problem lies, because majority of people do not know how to report, leave alone where to report, how to report. Now, my interactions with the children who have experienced Oxair, the first thing that you want to know from them is, now they are reporting. Sometimes they report when it is too late, or sometimes I ask the children, you are reporting these incidents now. What were the challenges probably that you had experienced that probably may have prevented you from reporting earlier? You find that these children are reporting issues of threats. If you report, I will expose whatever material that I have already. And remember, some of this material could be self-generated mostly, and they are in the possession of this other person who is now perpetrating the abuse. And so for fear of being exposed or being this kind of information being out there, for that reason, a child may not report. Yes?
Let me just ask you before you continue. When you say children are also reporting too late, what would your advice be in terms of the frequency or the urgency of reporting? How soon should the report be made?
Immediately. As soon as it happens, or as soon as the child feels someone is making them feel uncomfortable, then they should report.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
So when you look at the reasons why children are not reporting, and like I said earlier, some children are threatened that if you report, I will share this kind of material that I already have, maybe on Facebook. And for that fear alone, children will not report. Another issue that also came out during my interaction with the children is that when I report, what are you going to do after reporting? Am I going to jail? Am I going to be blamed for whatever it is that has happened to me? Then another thing that also came out is the reaction of the parents. The reaction of the parents. Yes, how are they going to react after this? So for fear of all those things, and among others, you may find that a child is going through something that is so serious and they are unable to report. And as long as this issue is not reported, or it remains unreported, then there are very high chances of the abuse recurring. There are very high chances of this child getting to a level where they can no longer longer cope with the situation. And sadly, some of them resort to maybe self-harm or even attempting suicide. Yeah.
And you know, there's something that I interacted with a few children through the classes that we hold on online safety.
Mm.
And it is interesting, just the way when we're talking about cyberbullying, you know, there's the bully and then there's the perpetrator. And sometimes when it is peer-to-peer bullying, I'm very keen to also understand this child who is being pushed by something internal to cause another person harm or to just cause embarrassment to another person. What is really going on in the life of this child?
Mm.
Because then they're feeling like, maybe I'm not being heard. I don't know how to express myself. And in turn, I have to cause pain to another person so that I just maybe share what I'm feeling or I feel better about what I'm doing. And when it comes to even online abuse, I have seen children who, just because they don't know how to cope with the situations they're in, they start recruiting into same abuse. So it becomes like a very vicious cycle where now there's a ringleader who is actively looking for other children to undergo the same abuse. I'm just curious, even when you're having, you know, your sessions with the children who have actually reported these cases, when it comes to sensitive spaces where a child is being abused by somebody they know, but not only somebody they know, a family member, how have you seen the families react and how have you dealt with such kind of issues?
In most cases, and I think that is the biggest problem also, that lies within families or family setups. You find that when abuse is happening at home or within a family setup, usually the family is not supportive because, one, for example, if it is a mother, this mother is protecting the marriage. So they prefer the marriage than the interest of the child, because now when they think of pursuing it, it will mean that that marriage will no longer hold. And so they get to a level where they now weigh the marriage over the child. The child is just a child. They can get over it. Or this child, when we just talk to them, things will just be fine, without knowing actually that this is something that could now culminate into other things in future. For example, like you said earlier, that these children, some of them end up being now perpetrators when it comes to peer-to-peer abuse. Mostly we usually say that every behavior has a motivation. When you look at the behavior of this child who is probably bullying others at school, this child may be going through something very difficult at home or even in their life, and they are not able to find better ways of talking about it or even finding help. And so this child believes that this is now the way that things should just go. For example, it is a new way of living. If I am hurt at home and I cannot vent it, I cannot find proper channels, or I cannot find safe spaces of talking about it, it kind of shapes the behavior of this child. And they believe that now violence is something that is acceptable because it is acceptable at my home, at a family level. So it is something or a behavior that can manifest even at school level. And especially when now you look at this child who bullies or even who is now having very violent behaviors towards the others. So what really encourage is that every person who interacts with a child, be it at home level or even at school level, ensures that there's a safe space for children where they can be able to air their views or their concerns or even their grievances safely without feeling like they are at fault, so that they are able to get help that they require.
Wow. All along, all of us who work within the ecosystem of children, we are all pushed to create safe spaces, because I do agree, places where there is sexual exploitation or abuse, home level, when the child is not feeling safe at home, then where else can they feel safe? And it is important for everybody who works within that ecosystem of the child, be it, you know, in the church, be it in school, outside the home especially, to make sure that there is an extension of safe spaces where a child can just come in and not feel victimized. Because you're talking about a child being free to express themselves and to talk about their experience and not feel like they're the problem or they're the ones who caused this problem. And allow me to just read, you know, for the parents who are listening to us. First, to remind you that as we use abbreviations like OCSEA is online child sexual exploitation and abuse. And there are different forms of child sexual abuse, where some of it can be hands-on, where there is actual physical abuse. But there's another one that is non-touching offenses. What could be touching offenses? Where there is, you know, fondling of private parts, touching a child's genitalia or asking a child to touch someone else's genitalia, playing sexual games with children, that is coercing a child to be sexual with animals, that is an offense. Genital, oral, or anal intercourse, that is offense. And forcing a child into prostitution. We have also, because of the online space where people are asking children or coercing children, you know, touch themselves as they're live streaming. That is actually child abuse, and it is introducing children into pornography. And then there is the other one, that is non-touching offenses, where expose your children to age-inappropriate content, pornography being one of it, exposing yourself, your naked self to a child, encouraging a child to watch or hear sexual acts, and then there is peeping, verbal or emotional abuse of a sexual nature. That is actually very traumatizing to children. You know, making fun of their body parts, you know, calling them names with sexual connotations. And of course, right now we are seeing a lot of abuse happening through phone devices, because they're portable and they're easily accessible to children. And I want to just draw you back to a conversation we were having previously in this podcast, where, you know, out of COVID and the lockdowns that happened within the last 1 year, things like mobile phones, because of availability and affordability, they're the things that we have given our children. So that is a platform, and that is an avenue where some of this abuse is happening. So Carol, I want you to just tell us, what are the behaviors that we need to look out for?
We have categorized them into three. We have the psychological,
yes.
We have the physiological, and this is when the exploitation or even the abuse has moved from online to offline. Then we have the social. Now, under psychological, we have seen children experience anxiety, children experience depression, there could be addiction, and this addiction could be addiction to sometimes drugs or even alcohol. And addiction, there is also online addiction. Yes, for us parents who are not aware, there is online addiction. So it is also good to note when it is too much, then probably your child may be addicted. Then there is low self-esteem. We also experience self-harm at this stage as a result of an experience. There could be eating disorders, and there could be suicidal thoughts or even attempting suicide. And that is psychological. Then physiological, when the abuse has gone from online to offline, it means that an actual sexual abuse has occurred. You could see a general ill health as a result of an STI or an STD or a sexually transmitted infection. You could also see evidence of self-harm. Experience that we once had was of a child who had experienced oxea, and they had a lot of pain inside. So this pain, this child had no avenue where they could air or even talk about their experience. They tried to cope with the situation, but it got to a level where it was now being unbearable for this child. And remember, if you are dealing with something that is very painful or even traumatizing, if you do not find proper ways of addressing or even dealing with the experience, the pain can be very overwhelming. So for this child, they felt that maybe cutting myself and feeling pain would relieve me of that pain that I was feeling inside, you see? So it is something that is very serious. There's also pregnancy. And also when we go to social, now you start looking at how this child is behaving. Now, this is where we look at the behavior, the general behavior of a child. You look at a child who has withdrawn from previously enjoyed activities. The child probably may isolate themselves from friends, family. This child may exhibit difficulty in developing and maintaining sometimes relationships. Sometimes they avoid certain places and people. Children sometimes who have gone through oxea have trust issues. So there's a way that if we are all keen, actually we can tell. And what we usually encourage, know you are normal, and especially with your children, just know how your child normally behaves. Then you will be very quick to notice if there's any change of behavior, and therefore reach out as soon as you are able. Now, another thing that may happen at that time, you could find a child, other than all that I have mentioned, a child all of a sudden becomes very secretive in their online activities. Yeah. Sometimes children may go missing for a period of time or regularly returning home late. Where are these children going to? What kind of friends are they keeping? And when they are outside with their friends, what kind of interactions are they having? So it is also very good to take note of that. There is also one that is very common. If you notice your child all of a sudden comes with unexplained gifts or possession that can't be accounted for, especially something that you've not bought. Remember, even you said earlier that there are gifts that exchange hands. Yeah, so this could also be an indication that someone is maybe buying your child gifts in exchange of something sexual. It could be a sexual message or a sexual image or a sexual video. Yeah, so it is also very good to take note of that. There could also be mood swings and changes in temperament. Of course, children who are going through developmental stages once in a while experience mood changes or mood swings, and especially when they are at their teen. But it is something that also can be an indication that something is not quite right and therefore needs to be addressed.
That is really interesting. I have been having discussions with different kind of parents, my friends as well. There's something that they keep repeating, childhood trauma. We were growing up, we had a very different, let me call it, environment of growing up. We didn't really have this internet space. So for us, information was very strict. It's either coming from school, it's either coming from home. What you're told is the Bible truth, because where else do you verify and find out, if there's a truth or a lie in that information? Our children are, however, living, in a space where they will still ask parents. But then as they ask parents, they have other avenues of verifying this information that we are telling them, And out of our own memories and our own experiences as children, we might have also gone through some abuse. The abuse that we might have gone through is we didn't have places where we could freely talk about these things. So sometimes parents feel like, I don't know how to help my child, or I also just don't know what to look out for. And that is why you have you've mentioned the behaviors and actually even just breaking them down. In my space of talking to parents, I've been noting a few things, and like behavioral cues, the children who are really being clingy and really showing a lot of anxiety. But then again, parents really don't know how do children show anxiety. Sometimes it is when they wake up in the morning and they suddenly have a tummy ache. They're feeling like their tummies are cringing. That is anxiety. When your child is constantly fiddling with themselves, either touching something, pressing something, that is a sign of anxiety. When a child is not able to sleep calmly through the night, they have nightmares or they have sleeping problems. They had already skipped the milestone of bed wetting, then they start regressing towards bed wetting. Those are signs, behavioral cues that there's something happening behind the scene. There are children who also have speech disorders. Your child had already gone through that milestone. They're speaking well, they're communicating, but then they start having issues. And as you say, it's self-harm. There are parents who really don't know how children are self-harming, and that's why we are here just creating this awareness, again, withdrawal or overly being out there. I think there's also the withdrawal where the children are not becoming very social. There is a point, and as you mentioned, when they're transitioning from maybe preteen to teenage, there's so many things that are happening. And because there is no social media where they feel, I'm normally not really told I'm beautiful at home or I'm kind and all these things, when they are posting things online, they're looking for affirmation. They want strangers to just tell them that, oh, today you're beautiful. And then that one day that people don't react the way they want, it starts messing with their self-esteem. It is important for us as parents to just understand, we might not have had this information growing up. We might not have had avenues to report. And that's why information right now is on your face, so that at least you're being more intentional and you're being more deliberate to creating safe spaces for your children. When I'm teaching them in class, I always tell them, your parents have your best interests at heart. So whatever happens, even in spaces where they are not there, and especially now that their friends are more likely to be inclined online, whenever you feel uncomfortable, tell your parents. But then I also tell parents, as you said, be accommodative, and remember, in every mother there was a young child who, I tell the boys, in every father you see out there, experienced life maybe differently, but still the same things. Growing up is growing up, having these feelings, it is the same as how we did it then. It's just that our environments are slightly different. And so it is important for the parents who are listening to us today to understand that it is your responsibility, first and foremost, to just create a safe space for your child, a conducive space where they can come and tell you, I was playing this game online because we are the ones who buy them, and somebody made me feel weird. So don't invalidate them. Make sure that they feel, so that at least your child feels that you're understanding and you want to be at their level. We bring this back to you. You said people don't know how to report and where. So first, how can we report?
Okay, maybe before I go to how to report, I would also want to add something small on what you have just shared about the safe spaces and our role as parents, and also a bit about anxiety. And I will give an example of a child. Most adults don't believe that there is childhood depression to begin with. They believe that I would want to call it a myth, because a lot of us adults believe that you can only be stressed when you are adult, when you are an adult or when you are a grown up. Children also go through depression. Children also go through stress. They also have stressful environments. They also have stressors in their lives. And I would give an example of a child who probably in the morning of Monday all of a sudden becomes sick, and they have a stomachache. They are complaining of headache, and they do not want to go to school, and they are vomiting, probably they are crying, and you would feel that huyu mtoto hataki tu kwenda shule. But the thought of that environment, this child going back to that environment, which this child at that moment probably considers a stressing environment, all this now is as a result of that stress. They are just imagining that I'm just going back to the same environment now. Today is Monday, and I will go through that every other day until Friday.
Imagine.
So it is not easy for this child to go through that. So what I encourage every parent, when you experience such with your child, it would also be good to want to find out what really happens in this child's life outside home environment. It could be school, it could be on the way to school. So what happens that is making this child not feel comfortable or get sick in the morning of going to school? And you find that the same child come Friday, they are very good and they are very well. Yeah. So it tells you that in this environment of this child at that level, probably the child is struggling with something. It could be maybe his classmates, or maybe they are not able to cope with whatever it is that is being taught at school. And therefore, it is not a very encouraging environment for them to go to. So such like things or such like behavior, if you are able to monitor that kind of trend, then it can clearly tell you that when it comes to this environment, this is how they behave. So it means there's something that I need to be maybe looking out for. Yeah. Then when we talk to children, even at the helpline, we encourage children who have reached out to us, above everything else, is to help these children identify safe spaces within their own environment. We can tell them to report to 116. They might not be in a position to get a phone to report or call and report. So it means that this child is stuck. So helping this child finding their own safe spaces is very important. So if you are a parent, your role is to help this child identify safe spaces for reporting. If you are not at home, who else can this child turn to? Because you can tell a child that if you experience some of these things, you can tell me or you can talk to me. What if you are not home? Who else in that network of the child can the child trust enough to share this kind of information? And especially where they are not feeling comfortable, or someone is making them feel uncomfortable. It could be a fellow, could be another parent. And here is an example of one parent abusing the child. So this child is not able to actually find help, because the person who I'm supposed to tell when I'm feeling uncomfortable or when I'm being abused is the same parent who is abusing me. So who do I talk to as a child? So helping a child identify a safe space for reporting, it could be a parent, it could be a trusted adult. Ensure that the child knows it has to be a trusted adult. And how does one get that trusted adult in the network of the child? So you can talk to this child around your network, help the child identify that one person. So even at the school level, help the child to identify that one person they can talk to in case they are feeling unsafe at home. Then we also encourage children to have other reporting channels, like for example 116. We have our number, which is a toll-free line. Any child can be able to access it. Parents, that you can give your children all these numbers. You can help your children to identify these safe spaces for reporting. But one key thing that I always consider very important is to help your child with information. Because I keep saying information is power. A child who is empowered will know when it is not right. This certain touch is not good and therefore I should talk to someone. So there's a song that usually is sung by children who are very young, empowering them with information, what constitutes my private parts, what should I do when somebody touches them, when should I say that this is a bad touch. So if your child has that information and they clearly know what to do is happening to or is happening around their private part, then this child is also able to even tell this other person that what you are doing is not right. We encourage them to even scream, make noise, raise alarm. You may not have the physical strength to fight this person, but make noise, shout, raise alarm, so that other people know that something is not right. Then lastly, we have our numbers. Like I said earlier, we have a toll-free line, which is 116. It is accessible through all networks. We also have our WhatsApp line, which is 0722-116-116. Facebook, which is Child Helpline Kenya. We also have an email where you can at 116@childlinekenya.co.ke. Matters Oxe, we also have other partners whom we work very closely with. We have the Department of Children's Services, where you can also talk to a children's officer. We also have DCI, where they have a special unit which deals with online exploitation and abuse. We also have KSAT, which is a National Computer Incident Response Team. It also provides information and assistance to its constituents in implementing proactive measures, and this is to reduce the risks of online abuse as well as responding to such incidences when they occur. Yeah, so basically that is where to report. Now, how to report also is also another question that needs to be addressed. So when you encounter a child who has gone through Oxea, or a child who is suspected to be going through Oxea, or even a confirmed case, sometimes you may report a case when it is too late, and especially if do not have any evidence linking the abuse with the perpetrator, then you can only report for the child to get psychosocial support or counseling support. But in terms of now pursuing it legally, it becomes a challenge because you do not have any evidence that can link this act with the perpetrator. So how to report? Ensure that if you encounter a child who is going through Oxea, if the abuse has gone from online to offline, then the time, sense of time actually in reporting this is very key, because we look at a child that needs to be given medical attention, and during this time some evidences are collected. The child is being tested for many other things, and what they are looking for example in this stage, is if there is any evidence of force, and this can only be found if maybe there are evidence of tears, maybe scratches, then this will definitely tell that there was evidence of force. There was force. Then they collect spermatozoa. This is evidence that there was sexual activity. So with this kind of evidence, when you now pursue it, when you want to pursue justice, then this is evidence enough to ensure that this case can move from one level to the next. Then when it comes to now online abuse, there are information that is very key. For example, the page, and maybe Evelyn, because you are a text person, maybe you can help us look at some of the evidence that one must have when it comes to reporting. What do you need to be having?
That is important actually, because it falls exchange of information in terms of videos and imagery and even text. Just keeping that information so that there's a trail and there's a proof of evidence that there's some abuse that happened. At least, you know, I know law enforcement officers would really, really benefit from such kind of information. So it is important for our children to know that when some of these things are happening, especially on the online medias, keep that evidence so that at least you're able to prove that this person was doing this to me and this is how it ended up maybe on the online platform. So just before we conclude our conversation, I just want to reiterate just a few things that I know spoke to me. Caroline has told us something very important. Every behavior has a motivation. And there is something that I posted last week on my social media platform, and this is what I said. Our memories and our experiences can influence the way we view children and childhood. Memories remind us of happy times as well as unhappy times. Mm-hmm. And being intentional as a parent means we need to understand how our past is affecting our present and how we move on with intentionality in parenting in the future. And part of disrupting harm posed to children is putting yourself into their space and trying to understand how that problem is affecting the child. Another thing that I also mentioned on social media last week, child online protection means putting the child at the center of learning. This is what we are doing today. We are creating information, we are creating awareness, and you have to put that child at the center of your learning. And as you're implementing safeguards, please consider your childhood so that if you have anything to disrupt within your childhood because maybe you went through some trauma, you are able to resolve that. Being aware that some of the things we do unconsciously affect us. There is this movie that I've been watching on Netflix, and it is called The Maid. But what it looks at is the cycle of trauma. And it is important for us to just watch this movie so that people who also go through emotional abuse, they hurt as much as people who go through physical abuse. One other thing that I know I have heard from Caroline is, as parents, we need to be able to create safe spaces. And let us avoid victimizing children when they are coming to report things to us, because that is the differentiator between a child feeling like they can talk to you or they can withdraw from talking to you. Childline Kenya has a toll-free number. It is 116. This is free and it is available on all networks. They also have a WhatsApp number, so should your children be able to access WhatsApp, it is 0722-116-116. That is a WhatsApp number. Please print them out and stick them in the places where your children visit, the toilet and the fridge. Those are places where your children visit every single day, so stick them there. And then there is also Facebook. I don't know if our children are on Facebook, but please just have these avenues available to them. Because as you have heard, so their Facebook page is Child Helpline Kenya on Facebook. And when you're reporting, please let them know to report early because time is of the essence. Keep the evidence if it is available and let your children also get support, psychosocial support the children need, and helping them go through this stuff so that at least it is not going to be an issue of PTSD for them when they are growing up. Now you have the information, start acting on it and realize that there is help out there for you.
Remember, talking about sex or sexual activity is not easy for adults. Now imagine a child who has gone through OXEA, online child sexual exploitation and abuse. Imagine this child talking about it. It is not easy. So if a child discloses abuse, just listen carefully to what they are telling. Tell them it is not their fault and they did the right thing by telling you. Let them know that you believe them. And remember, it is not easy for anyone to talk about their sexual experience. So do not make it hard for them to talk about it. Do not make it hard for them to talk about their experiences. They may not have the vocabulary, but how they say it, if you are able to grasp it, do not make them feel that you are questioning their experiences, and explain to them what you will do, and we encourage that you report immediately.
Thank you so much for being part of this podcast. I really truly value advice and the input that you have given us, and I'm sure very many parents out there will now be informed and will take appropriate action when child online abuse and exploitation is happening within the spaces that they are in. So dear parents, remember to subscribe to our podcast and remember that you are in control, and as a parent, you're enough. And until next week, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye.